afternoon.
I think we said. They welcome to the Zoning Committee, Health and Community Affairs of the City Parliament. My name is Pat Jaya. I am the committee secretary attached to this committee. My role this afternoon is to preside over the election of the co-chairpersons of the committee. I declare this meeting in terms of Joint Rule 25 read with Joint Rule 120. First, I will explain the procedure that we are going to follow. Since this is a joint committee, we will first elect the co-chair from the National Assembly component, following with the co-chair from the SCOP component. I now call for nominations from the NA component.
Honorable members, I'm greeting you, that's why I'm asking, how are you? Okay, wonderful. My name is Thabo Mmutse. I hereby nominate Honorable Cyril Gaba to be the co-chair.
Mr. Mmutse nominates Mr. Gaba to be the co-chair. Is there any second?
My name is Dilima Lolokwase. I stand to second the nomination of Mr. Kaba.
The nomination is seconded. Mr. Kaba, do you accept the nomination?
Yes, Chair, I do. Thanks.
Okay. Are there any further nominations? Okay. Without further nominations, Mr. Kaba, you have been elected to the co-chair from the NA company.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I now call for nominations for the co-chair from the NCOP component.
Just a clarification, does the NCOP nominate their own and we nominate their own NA, or can we?
The NCOP should nominate.
Okay.
Chair, I was in a meeting in the morning to constitute the joint standing committee on the, what do you call this? Constitutional review, a joint standing committee. In the meeting, the nomination was from the committee members, not from a section. In other words, I don't know. You're saying NCOP nominate NCOP and NA nominate NA, or are the members who make the nomination?
And you're saying one member from the assembly component should nominate one member from the members in the council.
I see.
From the NA and SOP.
Thanks, Chair. I don't know if the rules permits if we can ask for an adjournment or a break of 5 minutes or 10 minutes or so, permissible by the rules, and then we'll reconvene to finalize the process. Okay, thank you. If they do, we are requesting.
Okay.
All right.
Can you nominate yourself?
I suppose you can nominate yourself, yes.
But I won't get a check.
Hey.
Yeah.
Is it the meeting again?
Yes, but for 5 minutes.
Can we not, Chairman, also take a resolution that if the NCOP is not well represented, that they do it on their own?
And then give us the name.
No. Then they can get together whenever it is suitable for them, and they must just provide us with the name. I don't know if the rules are for that.
I don't know.
You know why I would not be able to say anything? It's because of the odd thing that happened when I arrived. Manifinga, nje. Abantu bayashukuma bayaphuma. Lima nje. Lifika nje. Abantu bayashukuma bayaphuma. So.
I think we do have a forum now to proceed with the election of the co-chair from the NCOP component. I now call for nomination. I think the Madam Mola from the NCOP nominate Comrade Chavini to the chair. I thank you. Honorable Mola nominates Mr. Chabelin. Is there any seconder? Mr. Chabelin, do you accept the nomination?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Mr. Chabelin, accept the nomination. Are there any other nominations? Without further nomination, Mr. Chabelin, you are duly elected the co-chair from the NCOP component. Congratulations. Both of you can take the chair.
to want to say a few words. And as a new chair of this team, and then from there we'll decide how we then move forward.
Thank you very much, colleagues, and we also thank the committee secretary. Having said that, colleagues, there are two items in there. The first item, as it is called, the discussion of culture of the committee, and then the second item. Section 2A of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, 1996. This employment is for the period 18 July 2019 to 16 September 2019. The total expenditure which is expected to be incurred for this employment is 23,391,351. I will communicate with the party members of the NCOC and wish to request that you bring the contents hereof to the attention of the National Assembly. That has been done. Hence, the Speaker was able to refer the letter to the committee. I'm sure the National Assembly, the Chair, of the NCOP referred it to us as well. So regarding this matter, we thought that because it's not an, it's an item that not often comes up in our meeting, it has its own uniqueness and is governed specifically by the sections mentioned in the Constitution, that we should seek some opinion on the matter so as to guide the committee how to deal with the issue going forward. two legal opinions were brought to my attention, both of which speak to the issue of employment of the members of the South African Defence Force. But I then said maybe we would need someone from the legal section to come and give clarity on those two legal opinions, how they originated, what is the understanding, and how those opinions go forward. But before that, in preparing for the meeting, I then thought probably we need to ask the researcher who brought these two legal opinions to my attention to just lay down the, you know, talk to the document we prepared, after which we head over to the legal section to then speak on the legalities before we launch into a discussion on the work of the committee. That the committee do agree. That the committee agree and its approach. Thank you so much. May I now invite Dr. Belem Williams, our researcher. He's the researcher of the committee, and Peter Daniel is the content advisor of the committee. Yes, and Pat is the committee secretary of the committee. May I then, at this stage, complete the introduction of the staff? Who else has not introduced? Yes, you may introduce yourself, sir.
Good afternoon, members. Good afternoon, guests. My name is Kunetan Manka. I'm the committee, the express committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Patrick Sikamla. I'm attached to the chairperson of the Transparency Commission of Defence and Peace.
And I tell my also supporting the chair.
Good afternoon, members and guests. My name is Rosalma Michaels, and I'm the executive secretary for the chairperson and co-chairperson on the NA side.
And who else
is
not introduced himself or herself?
Good afternoon. I'm Nomusa Sibisi, secretary to the chairperson, Joint Standing Committee on Defense.
Good afternoon, Chair. Our coaches, I'm Calvin Mangani. I'm the office manager for the Joint Standing Committee on Defense.
That is how well the committee is supported. I thought the committee members must know, and I guess members know each other very well. And with that, having said that, sorry, let me invite you, Stock, to take us from the.
Thank you very much, co-chairs. I'm quickly going to run through this document. There's a document that should be in your pile. Dated the 25th of July, and it's titled An Overview of Provisions for the JACD Oversight of Military Deployment Letters. I thought I'd just quickly start by also as a means of welcoming you to the committee at point 2 on page 1, just to run you through the history of the committee and the establishment of the committee. And this committee actually has a long history. It was established in terms of section 2283 of the 1993 Interim Constitution. And you'll see there a definition of the committee below that. But perhaps more importantly, for going forward, right at the bottom of the page, it speaks to the functions of this committee and what should be the focus areas of this committee. And point D there, taken from section 228 of the Interim Constitution, states that the committee shall be competent, the underlined part there, committee shall be competent to investigate and make recommendations regarding the budget, functioning, organization, armaments policy, morale, and state of preparedness of the National Defense Force. and then in addition, and to perform such functions relating to parliamentary supervision of the force as may be prescribed by law. So those are the central focus points that the committee can take from the from its establishing document, the 93 Constitution, going forward. But in addition to that, there's been subsequent discussions over the years about the exact role of this committee, and on page 2 there you'll see a reference to the Joint Rules Committee that specifically set out tasks for this committee, and they're listed there at the top of the page, and these include from number A to G. Number A says the Joint Standing Committee must report to both houses, and that is always the case, report to both houses on the employment of the South African National Defence Force by the President of the Republic in fulfilment of an international obligation in defence of the Republic or in cooperation with the South African Police Service. Secondly, the committee should also report to both houses when there is a declaration of a state of national defence by the President. This should be considered by the committee and reported on. Number C is the committee should report to both houses on the dealings of the National Conventional Arms Control Act. So the National Conventional Arms Control Committee, the NCACC, will report to this committee on a quarterly basis and on an annual basis. So that is one of the important functions of this committee, is to review the submissions by the NCACC. That is also a legislative requirement for this committee. Number D is, in order to give effect to the principles of transparency and accountability as envisaged in the section 199 of the Constitution, this committee should conduct a strategic overview of the South African National Defence Force's midterm in the life of a particular parliament. And then they should report on this midterm assessment to both houses. Number E, they should also liaise with civil society on the issue of civil-military relations. And this is really an important discussion to have in South Africa about the state of our defence force and where do we see the defence force going. So this committee is actually an important discussion point of discussion for civil-military relations. Number F, where applicable, they should report to both houses on matters affecting military veterans. The Portfolio Committee on Defence also deals with that, but where applicable and where this committee feels necessary, they can report on matters relating to veterans. Number G, perform any other function or exercise any other powers assigned to the committee by statute or in terms of resolution adopted by both houses. So those are the main functions of the committee. So you can see where it came from and you can see how the functions have developed over time, and I think this provides a clear guideline for the committee on our way forward. Chairperson, then the issue before the committee today is the discussion about the letter of deployment that you just read out. What I did in this document is purely a quick summary of the legislation that pertains to these letters that the President sends to Parliament. And if you turn to page 3, you'll see that I've bolded them there. There's a number of pieces of legislation that refers to this. And firstly, there was the 1993 Interim Constitution. Now, what is clear in all of these pieces of legislation and from 93 is that the President or the Executive has the power to deploy the Defence Force. And that it comes through in the first part there of the 93 Interim Constitution. But Section 2285, the underlined part in the middle, of the Interim Constitution also gives powers to Parliament. So it reads there that Parliament may by resolution terminate any employment referred to in Section 227, A, B, or E, but such termination of employment shall not affect the validity of anything done in terms of such employment up to the date of such termination, or any right, privilege, obligation, or liability acquired, accrued, or incurred as at the said date under and by virtue of such employment. So this, in the Interim Constitution, this gave Parliament the power to terminate such employments by the President. Then there was the new constitution, which was adopted in 1996. And if you turn to the next page, page 4, you will see the constitution stuck with the same rule that the president has the power to deploy the military. Right at the top you say, only the president as head of the national executive may authorize the employment of the defense force in cooperation with the police service, which is the case in the letter before us, in defense of the Republic or in fulfillment of the international obligation. crucially, then, the 1996 Constitution states that in number 3 there, in the italics part, when the defense force is employed for any purpose mentioned in subsection 2, the president must inform Parliament promptly and in appropriate detail of the reasons for the employment, the place, the cost, or sorry, the place, the number of people involved, and the period involved. So crucially there it says that the president must inform for Parliament. After that, there was also the 1996 White Paper on Defense. This policy document stuck mostly to the prescriptions in the 1993 Interim Constitution, so I won't go through that. It is basically a repetition of the 1993 Interim Constitution. And then there's on page 5, the top, there's also the 2002 Defense Act. Now the Defense Act, clearly and importantly, that first sentence, the Defense Act in section 18 differentiates between deployment of the military in terms of the Constitution and that of the Defense Act. So basically it says there are two types of deployments, deployments under the Defense Act and deployments under the Constitution. Section 1 there says, in addition to the employment by the Defense Force by the President, in terms of the Constitution, the President or the Minister may authorize the employment of the Defense Force for service inside the Republic or in international waters in order to preserve life, health, or property in emergencies or humanitarian relief operations, ensure the provision of essential services, support any Department of State, including support service for socioeconomic upliftment, and effect national border control. In this sense, so when you consider deployments under the Defense Act, there are provisions for Parliament, and that's in Section 2 there, the second italics part, it says, when the Defense Force is employed for any purposes contemplated in the Defense Act then, the President or the Minister, in this case, must inform Parliament promptly of the details of this deployment. This, at this stage, important to note that the letter before you is not in terms of, it's not a letter where the deployment is in terms of the Defense Act, it is a deployment in terms of the Constitution. However, if you look at deployments according to the Defense Act, right at the bottom, it says, number 5, Parliament may by resolution within 7 days after receiving information from the President or the Minister, confirm any such authorization of employment, order the amendment of such authorization, order the substitution of such authorization of any other appropriate authorization, or order the termination of the employment of the Defense Force. So those, when it's a deployment in terms of the Defense Act, there are clear powers for the Parliament in this regard. So, Chair, in conclusion, we can see how things developed from 1993. We're sitting with two types of deployments in terms of the Defense Act and in terms of the Constitution. The one in front of you is a deployment in terms of the Constitution. And to make the powers of this committee clear, there's some discrepancy or difficulty in interpretation of the move from the 1993 Constitution to the 1996 Constitution in exactly what the role of Parliament is. And that is caught up in the legal jargon. So we asked a colleague of ours, Siviwe Ndikela, from these parliamentary legal services to assist the committee in wrapping our heads around the legal terms and the legal implications for this committee to exactly see how this committee should deal with this deployment letter and the powers of this committee. And I think this will, if we grapple with it now, it will set the tone going forward on how this committee can deal with all the deployment letters that come from the President and the Minister. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Madam, for that I know the matters may appear to be clear. But of course, we all agree that the deployment is in terms of the Constitution. And therefore, and not the Defense Act. The Defense Act has an expanded role of Parliament. You know, in other words, it expands the mandate and role of Parliament. So we're not done under that act. at the time in terms of the constitution. The constitution, there are two constitutions that are applicable at this stage, is the 1993 constitution, the internal constitution, whose provisions were saved when the constitution was given, but this provision was saved. Alright? So it's a main applicable. And two, the section 12 of the constitution, the 1993 constitution. And I know that we're not crisis at the moment. I think we will all agree. Maybe I should not say we all agree, but generally the issues are clear. But we need to be clear, crystal clear, as we move forward on the matter. Sibiwe, together, please, can you comment on this one?
Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe I should start with the opinions, because the conclusions that I will be reaching are based on the opinions that we have already provided. The opinions were provided a while back in 2003 by Parliamentary Legal Services, and two opinions were given to the committee. If I may firstly start with the interim constitution, which is the 1993 constitution. And I think, like Velem said, the interim constitution provides for the employment of the defence force in cooperation with the police, as it is the case today here in the Western Cape. But it goes further. It empowers Parliament to terminate that deployment. Then we come to 1996. In the Constitution, that is Section 201, on which the President is deploying at this present moment, provides that the President is the only person who can authorize the employment of the Defence Force in cooperation with the police. Once he has authorized as such, he must promptly inform Parliament of that decision. And it specifies the level of detail that he must give to Parliament. The numbers, the purpose, the location, and of course the Defence Act adds that he must also disclose the expected cost of that deployment. But the interesting thing is, in 201, unlike in the 1993 Constitution, there is no specific provision that empowers the Parliament to terminate that deployment. And I think in our opinion of 2003, we came to a conclusion that there is a difference between the text of the 1993 Constitution and the 1996. Now, somebody will say, but Section 228 of the interim Constitution was saved under Schedule 6, that is the transitional arrangement. Now, if you read the transitional arrangement and the savings provision, it makes that saving subject to that provision being consistent with the new constitution. Now, and I think that's where the crux of this issue is. To the extent that it gives Parliament the power to terminate in 1993, is that Section 228 consistent with Section 201? Of the new constitution, which is silent on the issue. And we come to a conclusion, Chair, that there is a very big difference. When in 1996 the constitution was crafted, Parliament was fully aware of what was provided for in the 1993 constitution. There must have been a particular rationale why that wording was not imposed into this constitution. So it seems to us there was a clear departure by the drafters of the Constitution from what they had provided in 1993. And that departure you also see, Chair, when you look at Section 18 of the Defence Act, which again provides additional employment for the Defence Force by the President or the Minister. Again, there you will see in Sub 5, it specifically provides that for those deployments under Section 18, Parliament may terminate. Now, one may ask, what is the difference between these different employments under Section 201 and Section 18? The difference from my reading of the two sections is that 201 primarily deals with the presence of the president. These are the only deployments that can be done by the president. In cooperation with the police, international obligations, and in the state of national defense. That is exclusive only the president. That's it. That's the wording of 201. Whereas when you look at 18, it deals with what we call secondary functions of the defense force, where we have to preserve life. Now you see the minister for the first time coming up and being empowered to deploy in certain circumstances, but subject to the oversight of parliament, which can terminate that deployment if it feels it was not proper. So, Chair, I think the bottom line that we have to come to is that there is a difference between Section 18 deployment under the Defense Act and Section 201 of the Constitution. Under Section 18, Parliament has the power to terminate or substitute or amend. But under 201, we come to a conclusion that Parliament does not have that power. In other words, Parliament is being informed of the decision that was taken, but you have not been given any specific power to terminate or amend that deployment, which I suspect may raise other issues, Chair. But unfortunately, my job is just to tell you what is provided for in the law as it stands. If there is a policy debate that may ensue from that, I think that's a matter that I will have to leave to the members to debate and chart the way forward. But currently, Parliament is being informed. It must take note of the decision by the President and the deployment and report back to the House or the Houses. I don't know if there is anything, Chair, that you may want me to clarify over and above what I've just said.
Thanks. Colleagues, thank you so much. I think legally, the matter is very clear now that the section in the interim constitution, that section 228, was saved insofar as it is consistent with the 1996 constitution, which therefore means that the 1996 constitution become the key authority in relation to the current deployment of the police. With that, this may, I thought we should just give the clarity, but we put that matter to rest. All right, we put that matter to rest now, and then deal with the issue at hand. Now, having done that, what then do we do? Do we note this and then leave it at that for now? Or there is something extra that is expected of us for now? And maybe let me just get a discussion and then come back to consult the people. Mr. Murray?
Chair, thank you very much. Thank you for that information. I just sit with myself. I mean, initially I had no problems with the Constitution, Article 200 and 201. I think in 201 it speaks for when the President will deploy or declare a national state of defense. A national state. Now, what is a national state and what is not? And I think that is where you go to the 2002 Defense Act, where it seems to me it depends on who's reading it and who's interpreting it, because it can clearly state that, you know, for any purpose, actually. And I'm just wondering to what extent are these maybe in conflict at times, because you have to look at practical examples. Defense Act, for me it is clear that it is in cases of emergency. When there's something and you have to go and help, you have to send out, there's a, like the Achille Lauro, that ship that sank on the east coast.
that you can then jump in with the approval of the minister deploy. But it seems like it is also, you know, opening it up. So depending on who's reading it and who's interpreting it, because what is a national state of defense? Is currently the Western Cape's problem, is that a national state of defense? Or is a national state of defense something that affects the whole nation? I was clear until now where I said to me, to myself, so what is a national state of defense? And in the case of this letter, it only affects not even one province, it only affects one city. Is that a national state of defense? And can that be interpreted as a national state of defense? And in other words, questioning whether the minister could have also approved the deployment of the defense force in a national state of, not a national state of defense, actually a city state of defense in this case, and whether that is part of the interpretation. And I think if one can get more clarity on that, because it might be clear to us, but you might have a different president, you might have a different minister, and they might interpret it differently. And I just want us to get to a point where there's not confusion in terms of powers and functions. Thank you very much.
Thanks for any take-up?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Dennis Ryder. I'm a member of the National Council of Provinces. First of all, congratulations on your election to both of the co-chairs. Yes, I think good luck and you have our support. Interesting to note that your appointment is, however, extra legal, because in terms of Rule 25.1 of the joint rules, the Secretary should have called this meeting within 5 days of the ATCing of the names of the members of this committee. And while it's a bit late to go back and fix that, I think that the date of this letter from the President indicates that perhaps this committee should have sat already, and the fact that, that today is our first sitting is actually is fairly problematic. Because if one looks at the timelines involved, we could have probably dealt with this matter last week already. Having said that, Chair, I think I'm very comfortable with the fact that, that the deployment has been done correctly. And in answer to your question, I would suggest that we need to note the letter from the President, and not much more needs to be done by us, except for perhaps to monitor the employment and deployment going forward. But as my colleague has mentioned, I think we also need to make ourselves comfortable going forward as to how to deal with future deployments as well. Chair, I would appreciate if you introduced the members of staff beforehand. I'd appreciate if we took an email of all of their contact details so that we can remain in touch with them as we need. And also so that we can prepare adequately for meetings, because it would have helped if we had the full text of the Constitution here with us, etc. But yes, I think we welcome the deployment of the Defence Force to the areas in Cape Town, and we've been calling for it for a long time, and we're pleased to see it now go ahead. Thank you.
For this, Mr. Mathias, and yourself, and yourself, and the Commission.
Thank you so much, Honourable Chair. We are happy that the Joint Committee on Defence finally managed to sit and considered most urgent matters of its task. We congratulate the co-chairpersons. We've been in a Rural Development Land Reform Committee with the political commissar, Honorable Chamberlain, Amanda, thank you so much. So we extend our congratulations to you as well. Look, we as we said in the past, that we welcome the deployment of the military, but that should not be the be-all of the problem that face our people. And it will sound like a broken record. I'm saying this because while a member of the DA says that they've been making that call, and they're happy that that call finally has been answered to. It should not be the be-all of the problems that face our people here. What the government needs to do, both at national and provincial, as the Western Cape is governed by the DA, is to deal with the core socio-economic conditions of our people, which breeds the kind of conditions that have led to the military to be deployed here. So those conditions are the breeding ground for counter-revolution. And counter-revolution cannot be combated military under conditions of peaceful developmental initiatives. Counter-revolution cannot be combated through military intervention. So those core fundamental conditions that breeds gangsterism, which breeds drug smuggling or peddling of drugs and all sorts of things, requires a political, economic, social intervention. And we are appealing to both the national government and the provincial government to zoom into that space. Failing which, I can tell you, in the next 3 months, once the operation of the defense has come to an end, nothing would have changed in the townships here. And these townships predominantly are black and African people. Those who live in Bishop's Court, is it Bishop's Court? They live in absolute peace. They don't know what our people are subjected to there. And the military, the guns, the rubber bullets are not going to bring all of that to an end. The guns are not going to bring that to an end. We want drastic action to the socio-economic conditions of our people there to reinforce and buttress what the military is doing. Our army must not be left to do these things without political guidance. That's the call we're making. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think let me first join the rest of the honorable members who have congratulated you on your election to this joint responsibility. I just wanted to draw our attention to the issue here. So that the rest of the other issues we can save them for another time. Of course, we've got a lot of law, we've got a lot of politics around the Department of Defense. But the point at hand now is for us to take note of the correspondence from the President reporting and informing Parliament. And it is our responsibility then to agree in this House in terms of what is our way forward, in terms of making sure that we go and report to the two houses in terms of the deployment of the President, that indeed we have received that. As to whether it's a state of national defense or not, it's a discussion for another day. We can differ on that because it can happen in a small squatter camp and affect the whole nation, as it does in Khayelitsha and the Cape Flats. But it's a debate for another day. So I would then submit that let us note the deployment and accept the fact that the President has exercised his constitutional responsibility and obligation. Therefore, we go into the houses and then we report, and then we exercise our oversight responsibility in ensuring that the military or the defense force is doing the work that they are deployed to do where they are deployed. So that's what I wanted just to raise. Thank you very much, Chair.
Yes, Mr. Thank you, Chair. In the interest of time, because we must go to the House now, there was one proposal of noting this correspondence from the President informing this particular city. I therefore wish to second that. Secondly, I think it is important also to indicate that what Honorable Matthias has raised is important, because as much as there's a deployment to that particular area to deal with the anomalies that are taking place, but the root cause must be addressed. And the root cause in particular must be addressed by the governing party of the day in this particular province. Because in some few seconds, I want to share with this committee what one of the interview has revealed. They interviewed one of the gangs there. I'll just read quickly. A member of the Taxi Boys said, "The army would markom my girl on Skaninoch warini." It means they are worried. You know, people keep calling us, calling them drug dealers, and they said we are not dealers but small business owners. Yes, we may be going to suffer a bit with the presence of the army, but they appreciate that there will be peace. But what it means is that they will stop their business of drug dealing for that period of 3 months, because they are quite aware. And the problem will perpetuate after the army has left. Now, we must deal with the real challenges down there, not try to resolve them from a helicopter point of view. So the challenges are deep. They need to be dealt with from their roots. So this is what the gangsters are saying in that area. They are saying they are going to suffer, their business is going to suffer for a while, for a period of 3 months. They are not willing to retreat. They are willing to wait and suffer for that 3 months, and business will continue after that 3 months, which is something that we need to look into very carefully. As I submit, Chair, I second the noting of this letter. Thank you.
Well, what I wanted to say has already been said, that the debate around all of these things is for another day. I think let's note the letter and let the process go ahead of taking it to both houses. But I agree that the difference between the 1993 and 1996 and so on, that can be debated some other day, whether it's a national or a city problem and so on. That can be dealt with, because I've got my own views. If you've got a problem with your toe, the whole body suffers. Thank you, Chairperson.
We listen to all of you. There seems to be consensus on noting and welcoming the decision of the President taking the term with Section 21, Subsection 2A of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. And we will prepare a report to that effect, because the House must know, and it must be agencies, how this committee concluded on the matter. Just for noting. I'm not expecting Parliament at this stage to do anything more. I don't know what else they could do, but just reporting to them that we have received the matter, noted it, and welcomed it. Mr. Mare, I'm running out of time.
Just one question to you. I think I've done it personally to you as well. On the last page where the conclusion, it refers to practical oversight over deployment, equipment, utilized, and challenges faced. It's again maybe a suggestion to the committee that in terms of that recommendation, how we need to do our oversight is to actually, when we start with our next term, next quarter, is to pay a visit so that we can talk to them and say, what are your challenges? What do you need us to do going forward for next, for further deployments? So that's my only thing that I'm requesting or suggesting.
I've already anticipated that. You'll see it in the committee. What's it called?
Program.
Which will okay. Table when we come back. We were supposed to do it on Tuesday. Well, yesterday. We were supposed to table the program.
Oh, okay.
Yesterday. But due to our meeting being postponed, whatever, came to you. The next available slot, sometime after when you come back, we then table our thing, our problem of action for the first, what do you call it, for the first term?
Yes, second.
Second term.
We will spell out what exactly we will do. Part of it, talk to the work team. So I think let me leave that for now, and then thank you all our members for the opportunity.
Thank you.